welcome to Season 3, Episode 9, which is also Episode 81 of the Retro Game Club podcast. I am Rob, and someone with me who just has no idea what time it is, Hugh.
Yeah, is it 1 o'clock, 11 o'clock? Is it Monday? I don't know.
Yeah, are we 2 hours difference? Are we 1 hour's difference? Is it the same time? Who knows?
Yeah, your guess is as good as mine. You know, a few years ago, Illinois started a bill to go to daylight savings time always. Mm-hmm. So we would get rid of the fall back part, I guess. Mm-hmm. And like every news site in the world reported it as Illinois bans daylight savings time, which one is wrong because we were actually making it permanent. And two, the bill never passed.
Yeah, I think it would have been, we just need to get rid of this. It needs to stay daylight saving time everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be nice. And if Illinois did it, you know, we still have like one of the busiest airports in the country. So I feel like everybody else would start to fall in line because the airlines have a lot of money, or at least they used to. And, you know, they would probably force everybody to be on one time zone.
Well, it's coming up in other states now. So hopefully there's a snowball effect happening because we are all sick of this. Like, I think Michigan and Florida and maybe a few others at least. But what's been going on?
Not much. Not a ton. I finished East 9 a while ago, probably a week ago at this point. And not really sure what I want to start next. I don't know. I got to, you know, always have a pretty big backlog, but work's been a little bit busy, and I haven't really wanted to start a new giant game just yet. So I don't know. I'll come up with something to play. I'm just not sure what yet. And my off-topic note for the week is I've been trying to understand what NFTs are. These are in the news all the time.
Yeah.
People selling digital tokens that mean you own something, but you don't really own it.
Yeah.
As far as I can tell, this is the old Star Registry scam, but now with blockchain, making it 10 times as scammy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people are selling what, their tweets. Some bands are selling MP3s, I guess. Okay.
Yeah. So the thing that's interesting to me is like, if someone writes in and says, well, you just don't understand blockchain, I assure you, you are wrong. I probably know more about blockchain than the person writing the email explaining blockchain to me. Just because the industry I work in and the type of application I work on, like a few years ago, I had, some, say, executive level person be like, hey, I heard about blockchain, and I think we could, like, trivially replace our entire application with blockchain. And that's sent me down a very long research path, where then I got to explain to them that no, blockchain would actually make everything we do 100 times worse.
Yeah, yeah.
So I understand the technology very, very well, and that's why, like, I see this, you know, hey, I bought this digital artwork, but I don't actually own any rights to it. You know, for millions of dollars, it's a scam. It's all a giant scam. Don't buy into this.
Well, here, I'm going to give some caveats to that. I'm not disagreeing because I do think it's like, why would I do this? But with a but in there, done. It's hard for musicians to monetize. You know, you used to be able to sell albums, and now music is free. And you used to be able to then make music playing live gigs, and then that went away a year ago. So there's a lot of people just trying to figure out how to make some money with what they do. So yeah, I'm giving some leeway to the musician types out there, because you got to eat, and you know, an idiot with their money, whatever, you know, if you could get their money.
Yeah, yeah.
But selling tweets and stuff, I'm not down with.
Right, but just again, you don't actually own the thing you're buying. Like, we could go and we could sell our first episode as an NFT, and then tomorrow you could just hit the delete button on it.
True, yeah.
Like, and we could sell it again. I guess I'll sell 100 of them. Who cares? But that's about it for me, man. What have you been up to?
Yeah, it's been a long time since we recorded. When we started this, I think it was in episode 0, we said, like, yeah, it'll probably be every other week. And then literally this podcast has been every single week. So I don't feel too bad about missing a week, but yeah, you've been busy and I was busy, and we just wanted to, I honestly didn't have a chance to play the games for a little bit and actually read all the articles. That's why I wanted to postpone. You know, I could have squeezed in recording, but I wanted to actually play them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I finally fit that in. Yeah, I've been playing Ghost of Tsushima as a modern game, you know, on top of our game club games. But, you know, with my kid, apparently is control of the TV now. So now where my PlayStation is. So sometimes when he's around and I still want to play, I'll do the remote PlayStation play in my basement. Two things with that, which they don't explain really well. You can't use the, I don't know, I forget what the big button is, the trackpad thing on the PS4 controller. You can't use that over Bluetooth if you're connected to Windows or really anything. You have to plug in USB. So that was annoying to find out because the game I'm playing needed that. And also, I have a 10 gigabit wired network running through my house. Now, granted, you know, the PS4 is, I don't know, 100 megabit, gigabit tops.
But good. I know where this is going. Good.
Yeah, it's going nowhere good. It should be able to at least stream at 720, if not 1080, flawlessly. It was defaulting to 540 and maybe 25 frames a second. I'm glad I got it working. And just the fact that PlayStation Now is a thing that works really well, where you stream games over the internet, and Stadia, Matrix, I pronounced it your way this time. Stadia is a thing that actually you could rip on it all you want, but it works great. You're streaming games through the internet with very low latency. No one uses it, but it works great. With PlayStation 4, I can't stream wired in my house very well.
Yeah. Yeah, so I, at one point, tried to get the PS4 to Vita thing working. This is two different pieces of Sony technology that they claim works. So you can turn on your PS4, and then anywhere on your network, you can have the Vita playing the PS4 game that's in. Does that make sense? So basically, you see the PS4 screen, and the Vita is like a PS4 controller.
Yeah, I mean, they marketed the Vita for that when they launched it.
Yes. And no matter what you do, it tells you you don't have enough bandwidth, no matter what type of connection you have. And I've tried all of them. It will tell you not enough bandwidth. I'm convinced if you somehow connected a fiber line directly from the PS4 to the Vita, it would tell you there's not enough bandwidth. That's the only thing I haven't tried yet.
Yeah.
It's as far as like, and of course I looked online and it seems like not a single person has ever successfully done this thing before.
Yeah. I think that's a good listener question. I know it's not retro. I know Vita's getting retro, but if anyone has had success with this, with the Vita or the PlayStation TV, let us know how you did it.
Yes. This is the one way the Wii U is like vastly superior to the PS4, because you can take that Wii U pad and you can take it pretty far away from the Wii U and play games on it. And it works perfectly.
Yeah, it's absolutely a coding thing. They must have put their intern on this project or something.
Mm-hmm. Really, they're trying to get you to buy a second PlayStation 4 for your basement TV.
Probably, yeah. But
all right. Well,
yeah, we should probably... I know we're on a limited time today, so we should probably jump into some news, huh?
We are. We're both very busy. Today I have like a time crunch later. It took someone who writes for Destructoid 30 years to beat Zelda 2.
Yes.
A thing I think I beat when I was 12. So
this was a difficult game for me, but I think I can't find it right now, but one of the last lines in this is you know, now he uses the rewind feature in the Switch, which he says is great, but it's compensating for something which he is lacking, which is called patience.
Mm-hmm. But, yes. I mean, you know, summer 1987 or 88 or 89, so I probably wasn't 12. I forget what year this came out, but yeah, you know, it was probably summer vacation. And, you know, if you're not really an outdoor kid, then... you got a lot of time to play Zelda 2.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, we need, yeah, if you don't have a job, if you're a kid, you could just play it over and over again.
And, yes. Sonic is literally God for an entire planet. This is according to the comics. Is this canon or is this comic book canon?
Yeah, I think the comics are canon. I think kind of like DuckTales, Sonic leans heavy into it. And yeah, apparently on his way back home to whatever his planet is called, I forget. Yeah, these creatures evolved. He made a side trip onto this one planet. And then these creatures evolved from that planet to really think that he is some kind of god. So that's actually pretty funny.
They should, I think it's a Twilight Zone episode.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I kind of like that. And we have, yeah, this is our unplanned Sonic segment, I guess. Sonic the Hedgehog's weirdest moves that defy all logic. So let's have a speed round here.
Okay.
Figure eight super peel out is one.
Yeah.
Running on air. And again, these are all in the comics too.
Yeah.
A numbing karate chop. So there is another fast big guy trying to get him and he could karate chop the guy's knee and he can't feel it anymore and he falls over.
Okay. That might actually work.
Oh, totally. I think that one doesn't defy logic. This one is the one I really don't understand. Vibrating his molecules.
Uh-huh. Wait, did they start with the premise that he's a hedgehog that can run on hind legs?
Yeah, like literally the whole thing is defying logic.
Yeah, I always wonder about these things that like really break down fictional characters and why things that this completely fake character can do don't make any sense. Top 10 things about the Force that don't make sense. I'm like, well, what about the existence of the Force? Can you just start with that?
Yeah, yeah. Lasers that stop in the middle of air.
Yes.
And his last one, making fire with his feet.
Yeah, I've done that by accident.
Yeah.
let's see. Destructoid wrote a lot about Zelda this week because they also wrote about how Legend of Zelda helped free us from arcade ports, which, of course, yeah, it's a pretty obvious thing. Like, I would say Zelda and Metroid were both big contributors to that because really game systems up until the NES were very heavily dependent on arcade ports. I mean, of course, there were original games developed for, 2600 and Intellivision 7800. I think my favorite Intellivision games are all not arcade ports. But it was kind of a standard fare that home consoles were predominantly for arcade ports. And, clearly Nintendo was more successful at changing that than Mattel was.
Oh, totally. And the inclusion of the battery inside the cartridge for your save games where, you're literally saying like, you don't need to feed us quarters, play this all you want, save, walk away, come back. You didn't even need to write down passwords or anything like that. Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense.
All right. So there's a site here that, has a link to Nicole.express. I don't know how you get a URL like that. But they have a review of the Sega Saturn Satiator. Satiator? How do you pronounce that?
I was going to ask you. S-A-T-I-A-T-O-R.
Yes. And so this is a thing you plug into the expansion port on the Saturn, and then you can play images that you have legally ripped.
Yes. Or likely torrented.
Yes. I'm not asking any questions about where you got your Sega Saturn images.
No.
And this is a very long review. It gets into load times and a lot of details on how it works. It does not work with video CDs, which I forgot existed on Saturn, so I don't think it's a big deal for anyone. Mm-hmm. Seems like they're mostly using it to play import games.
Yeah, they tried it with a few US games, though, and they said it works great. It works great with the memory upgrade. Yeah, it makes your load times a little bit faster. In fact, faster than the mode, which is the Terra Onion one that you have to take apart your Saturn to get working. So this seems like something a lot of our listeners would really like. I would like one of these. Is there a link to a price or anything?
So.
official site has purchase info. And you could buy one here. This is one of the worst sites ever. About $260. It's out of stock right now. And it has a hilarious Hello Kitty-like graphic art on it.
Yeah. This sort of looks like something someone is making in their garage.
Yeah, with like a 3D printer and some prototype boards. But
yeah, that would explain the price for sure, that they're probably hand assembling each one.
And it supports up to a terabyte SD card. So, I mean, you could easily fit all your Saturn stuff on there. This is great.
Yeah, every Saturn game ever made is under a terabyte, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, definitely. I really think, I mean, I have lots of ROM or ISOs and yeah, it doesn't get close. I hope our listeners buy this and tell me about it. I already have a mode and a FOB or Rhea, whichever one is for the U.S. Saturn. So I can't justify spending even more money.
Mm-hmm. Stick with the Saturn, I guess. Panzer Dragoon 2 Zwei, which means translates to Panzer Dragoon 2-2, there's a remake. Along the lines of the first Panzer Dragoon I-1, I believe it's called, that will be coming out, I guess, this year.
Absolutely. This is exciting. Spoiler for two episodes from now, but not this episode, but next episode, Panzer Dragoon is going to be my game. So.
All right. I will be dusting off my Saturn then.
Yeah, absolutely. Or your Switch if you bought the remake. Have you ever heard of Legend of Makai?
I have not, but it's, I guess I went to play it soon. It is a Halico or Jalico, I don't know which one's correct, game, and I have no idea what this is.
Yeah, I watched some gameplay online, but that was like 2 weeks ago now, so I totally forget what it is. But as of 10 days ago, you could buy this for $7.99 for Arcade Archives. I guess it was it made by Hamster? Oh, yeah, they do all those ports.
Yeah, Hamster does all the ports.
I tried to get them for an interview, but no response. Super Nintendo World Theme Park. Is opening in early 2025 in Florida. That's big news.
That is big news, yeah. Yeah, probably wanted to do it a year earlier, but it might be hard to... it's in Florida, though. Was this Florida or California?
Which Florida.
Is this? Florida. Florida, yeah. So I guess anything goes in Florida, so maybe there weren't any restrictions on working on it.
Yeah, this is going to be at Orlando Universal Resort.
Yeah, which I've gotten to a couple times. It is... I could... At this point, come up with all kinds of great tips for there. But have you gone there? You've been there.
Not for a long time. Me and my wife, since, you know, vaccinations are pretty in Michigan, like pretty much widely available. We're starting to talk about quick vacations before mm-hmm. everyone starts traveling. So I might be hitting you up on some tips for that.
Yeah. I've... gone there a few times. General advice, never go to Florida in summer.
A little muggy.
Yeah, unless you enjoy really, really sweating a lot, do not ever go. It's the reason I stay up north most of the year.
Yeah.
Nintendo cannot repair some 3DS models because it's out of spare parts.
Yeah.
Well, big market opportunity for someone to make... Repro parts. Then we got a YouTube video here, how to make a Game Boy cartridge.
Yeah, this guy got a blank Game Boy dev cart from eBay for £50. And he pretty much takes a ROM and what do you call it? Do you image ROMs? Do you write ROMs? What do you do to those again?
Well, you would write it, right?
I guess. Well, yeah,
it's really an EEPROM, right? It's not really a ROM.
Exactly. Yeah, because you can wipe it with UV light.
But yeah, he has a whole gizmo here to wipe it.
So you can, make your own Game Boy cart now. And it's a little, you know, you could do that before, but this is a pretty fun video on how it's very easy to do and not too expensive.
unofficial Mario game. Pub Jumper Mario. It was a Commodore 64 unofficial game. I guess someone has found it. It really just looks like a ROM hack of Popeye. I guess it's not a ROM because it's a game. I assume this will get a takedown very soon.
Let's see if it's still here. The source is still available. That's good. Nice, yeah. Yeah, it's not the best looking game. It looks playable.
Yeah, it looks pretty bad. Yeah.
It's definitely there. Now, it's something someone made themselves as, I think, a 12-year-old in 1983. And it just kind of, it's not like someone just made it now. So a 12-year-old made this in 83. So, you know, they did a great job.
I probably could not write this game. I'm not like criticizing the person. You know, they certainly did better than I could do. I could definitely make an even worse version of this game.
But you're not running out to play it because it doesn't look like the best game ever made.
Yeah.
Speaking of best games, not the best games that were ever made, Pac-Land. This prototype was found, what was this, for the Amiga. And apparently the actual Pac-Land that came out for Amiga was not great, which again, it's pretty known that I'm not a Pac-Land fan. Apparently this prototype was a lot better and it just never got released.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I think we did Pac-Land on the show quite a while ago. And it's a game I like the aesthetics and I kind of like the idea of Pac-Land, but the execution is very bad.
Yeah, especially in the arcade where I don't think you have sticks in this game, right? I think it's all buttons.
No, it's just it's all button based.
Oh, that is horrible. What a horrible choice. Else.
Let's see. Former Activision co-founder is getting back into the Atari 2600 game business, basically doing small runs of new 2600 games. So he's got something called Casey's Gold and Circus Convoy that I don't recall. I looked at it a week ago and you could not actually pre-order them yet, but they have a... Yeah.
Circus Convoy looks very advanced. It looks better than 2600.
It does, yeah. It looks really good. So they basically have a place to sign up for when pre-orders open.
Cool.
And I don't know. Maybe I have no idea how much these Activision guys made back in the day. You know, when they sold, didn't they sell the company or something?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
You know. Maybe they're just sitting on mountains of money. I don't know. This looks like a good game, though. It doesn't look like, you know, someone trying to just make a quick buck on a bad 2600 game.
Yeah, it looks like their company is called Audacity Games. So if anyone wants to look that up and doesn't want to...
Yeah, their site is very low frills. It's really just...
One of their things scrolling across is just HTML code. I can't get it to happen again, but it was kind of a funny bug.
Oh, actually, you know what? Pre-orders open in 3 hours.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
What else do we got here? Let's see.
Building the ultimate retro computer. So this is an article from The Verge about... I put this one on because I thought you would like this. This is about using the Mister to create a authentic retro computer.
Absolutely, and The Verge... Definitely hit it on the head this one where, yeah, if you want to recreate, you know, an Apple II or a DOS machine or really anything, I mean, this has got you as a VGA port and a USB port for your keyboard and mouse. And if you know, even if you want to use a legacy actual keyboard for, you know, a computer that you don't have anymore, there's USB adapters for all that stuff. So yeah, the Mister is the way to go. I wish I had more time to put mine together. I think I have all the parts in the mail, finally. I just have to go through all the boxes.
Yeah, and this is also talking about like a particular case and some other add-ons that you get to, you know, get this whole setup together.
And yeah, with the help of archive.org, you got all the software you need, too. We got a strange one on Hackaday, retro Dreamcast rhythm game controller built from scratch. This is for a game called Poppin' Music, which I have never heard of.
I've heard of the game.
It's It's a good looking.
I don't know why I've heard controller. Of it.
Almost looks like a whack-a-mole. Yeah,
they built a giant game show, you know, button type controller thing here.
Yeah, it looks like a bunch of buzzers or something. You're right. But yeah, so if what a niche thing. I couldn't imagine doing something like that.
So this is one that I feel I've heard about before, but I guess it's a new article in Hackaday about how the DS Lite has a secret composite out video built in. So you can actually hook it up to a TV screen, at least the top screen. The bottom screen wouldn't make any sense to hook up to the TV. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I feel like I saw an article talking about this a long time ago.
In fact, I think when you plug it in or access it, it actually turns the top screen off.
Yeah. Well, it looks like on the demo here, they just literally detached the top screen.
Removed it, yeah. And it looks like, does it need a firmware update to actually work?
Like, is it it needs a mod disabled? Of some sort.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like super, this is not for most people.
No, but pretty neat. And yeah, Mario Kart DS looks pretty good there.
And then we're going to close out with a couple, two AI articles.
Yeah, they're both kind of strange, but this first one, reinforcement learning algorithm scores higher than humans and other AI systems at classic video games. So I guess reinforced AI is AI that actually learns by, what's the word I'm looking for? Patterns. It's kind of pattern recognition as well. So a lot of AI is really clever programming, you know, but this picks out the patterns and can solve games and does really well at 2600. There's a video here with, it has to be at least 10 games that's plowing through.
Yeah. Okay, so, I don't want to be that guy, but I mean, your description of reinforcement learning is a little bit off.
Well, please, no, correct me, please.
I don't want to be like I did my master's thesis on this, essentially you're using an AI where you define a set of rewards. Basically, you're creating an AI where, you know, you give it positive and negative. It's sort of like, I hate to say, it's like training a dog, right? Mm-hmm. Where there's positive and negative reinforcement for every action the AI takes, and the AI is trying to figure out how to maximize its score, mm-hmm. right? And you do have to know a bit about the game or thing that you're writing for that to work. Like, the AI is not going to figure that all out on its own because, you know, it may take a path that gets it to a very high score, but then it fails, you know, after a certain point. So it has to know some heuristics of the game that you're writing for mm-hmm. as well. There was some crazy thing a few years ago where like some AI, I believe using the same algorithm or same type of algorithm, you know, found out how to get like infinite points in Qbert. Like, you know, it'll figure out like things that maybe humans wouldn't try. Mm-hmm. I guess I'd have to see some of these playthroughs. I mean, they talk about a couple different games in this article and, I just have to believe that the people that wrote this knew, you know, they didn't just hand the blank game over and like feed the score into the AI and just say, keep doing stuff with the joystick and do mm-hmm. things to get you the highest score. Right. Mm-hmm. I think they had to at least teach it some of the rules of the world.
We'll have to see. A lot of the games are very different, but that's a very good point. And I was just thinking that, no listeners, please. Don't take this idea, but I'm going to give it to everyone anyway. Yeah. This would be a funny Twitch channel of just AI playing games.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it'd be very good. You know, the thing is, 2600 is probably an easy system because you're going to end up teaching it. See, this thing, you're going to end up teaching it how to act in certain frames. I bet you it's basically building a map of what to do at each frame by the end of it. In figuring out the optimum path through frames. So it's not actually like React. So it's not an AI in the sense of like, like if you were playing Madden foot, like you're teaching to play a football game, you talked about pattern recognition, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're building a football AI, you may build in some pattern recognition because it's like, okay, the defense is in 4-3 formation and, you know, this linebacker is in and this one's out, you know, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And from that, you would make a decision based on like the situation. And with these reinforcement algorithms, that's not really what you're going to do. You're basically trying to find a path. So like you would use it maybe to solve like shortest path between two points.
Yeah. So what you're saying is this would probably be good for something like Jungle Hunt, but this would not be good for like Magician's Apprentice.
Well, this would be bad for any game where the results are random. Mm-hmm. Like, this probably works pretty well for game mode 1 of Adventure on 2600, but not well for game mode 5 on Adventure. Does that make sense? Do you know Adventure well enough?
No, I don't. No.
Oh, so game mode 5 is totally, everything is placed in a random location in the game. Oh,
okay, okay.
I bet this algorithm would not succeed at mode 5 for Adventure, but would easily destroy mode 1. Mm-hmm. Because mode 1, everything is always in the same spot.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
But that's the secret, of course. Like, most Atari 2600 games have zero randomization.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this gets back to how people figured out that the Dragster world records were fake.
Because there's just no way.
Right, right. And so once these have figured out a path, they just, you know, it's basically just building like a long string of instructions.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. Yeah, pretty interesting. And then the next AI, C-Man creator Yote Saito on Fishy Dreamcast AI that was way ahead of its time. Did you get a chance to go through this one at all?
No, I think this got added late, or I saw C-Man for Dreamcast and remembered like how unsettling that game is and decided not to read any further.
He just talks about, you know, kind of how and why he came up with this game. And it uses the voice recognition. You know, there's only so many kilobytes or something you could use in the Dreamcast for this kind of thing. So how he licensed the technology and then made it work very specifically for this application, and how very capable the Dreamcast was at the time. Mm-hmm. So it's a very long article / interview, and pretty interesting. If AI and or a C-Man is your thing.
Yeah. I'm sure the Dreamcast can do I'm sure the Dreamcast can do a lot more than what we were exposed to. Just because it had such a short life cycle, mm-hmm. that, you know, if the Dreamcast was active as long as the PlayStation 2 was, there would be some very, very advanced games towards the end.
Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, I guess our topic this week was AI, huh?
Apparently, yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that was the news. And I actually held back almost as many news items as we had in this. There was just so many because we missed a week. So
yeah.
I guess we should just go right to Game Club.
Okay, yeah, let's go. The thing is, you mentioned you played both of these late. I played both of these like the day that we recorded our last episode.
Oh, nice. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
Well, I did Star Fox, which is a Super Nintendo game. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you know Star Fox. And it was famous for polygons on the SNES, even though it was only mm-hmm. a few polygons. And it used the Super FX chip to do that with. And the creators of this game, you know, joke around saying that the Super Nintendo was pretty much just a holding thing for the Super FX chip. You know, mm-hmm. it was just so much more advanced. This is known as Starwing in Europe and Australia. You play as Fox McCloud, and you have all your friends like Slippy Toad and Peppy Hare and Falco and a few others. And you fly around and shoot things. And I don't know if it sounds like I'm not too hot on this game. It just, for me, I played Star Fox 64 before I played Star Fox. And so going back to Star Fox really did not age well. The only parts of this game that I think are even playable are the parts that you have an aiming kind of crosshair thing. Some of the levels or some parts of the levels you don't. I couldn't get my aim on without those. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's impressive that all this was on the Super Nintendo, and a lot of people really cherish this game. But for me, it just didn't age well. Maybe I remembered it more fondly. I kind of bounced off it hard this playthrough. You know, it's kind of like widely known now that many interviews have been made that, you know, these guys pitched this and obviously it was accepted, and they're part of, I don't know what, you know, Nintendo building they were in developing this, but was the only part of the building that Miyamoto could smoke. So he would go back all the time to have cigarettes, and they would just make sure that when he was walking back there, they would have the coolest parts of the game playing just to impress him. But you know, I've played this one. I played, obviously, like I said, Star Fox 64. And then most recently, whatever one that came out for Switch. Oh, Starlink Battle for Atlas I got. And I actually bounced off that pretty hard. That was a, 2019 game, I want to say. Maybe 2018. I don't know. Not much to say about this one. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are cringing at me right now, but I'm just not too hot on this game. Nothing wrong with it, just not for me. What are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I wasn't real big on it either. I played it on the Super Nintendo Classic Mini, whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. It's visually a very, very nice game. I mean, I think it still graphically looks pretty good. It's just not a solid game I ever get into much. And, you know, I didn't really care for the controls. Certainly crashed a lot. I realize I could just get better at the game, but it's not something I normally play. It's way ahead. The thing that's interesting about Star Fox is, like, there are 32X games that are clearly kind of mimicking the Star Fox formula, and Star Fox is better than all of them. And Star Fox is better than basically every polygonal game on the Jaguar, except for maybe Iron Soldier. Mm-hmm. It's so far ahead of every other game, you know, even on systems with you know, allegedly better hardware. Mm-hmm. But it's just not something I normally play. And I have played Star Fox 64, and I can't really get into that either, unfortunately.
For some reason with that one, it just connected with me, and I really liked it. You know, we won't talk about it too much because that'll probably be a Game Club game in the future. But yeah, this one, I mean, for me, I think a good analog is Mario Kart to Mario Kart 64. You know, going back to Mario Kart, Super Nintendo is just kind of meh for me, you know, where...
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah, not great. Yeah. Right when you get the 64, the real 3D graphics where you're, you know, more than, you know, 30 polygons, you know, that's where it really 3D really started hitting for me. So, yeah, I mean, I'd really like to know what our listeners think of this game. I hope we're not too alone on this one. And I really wanted to like this one more, but hey, live and learn. But let's go to your game.
Yeah, so I did Frogger, definitely an accessible game to play. Mm-hmm. So I first played on the 2600, which definitely has not aged well. I mean, I think for the time it was released, it was on par for a lot of other ports. So then I switched to the Genesis version, which looks a little different than the arcade. It's sort of weird, like they could have just done an arcade perfect version of Frogger. But instead they did like this kind of cartoonier version like they did with Ms. Pac-Man, although I realize it's different companies involved. And it's good. I mean, it plays just like Frogger, just with a little better graphics. You know, when I was young, I was pretty bad at Frogger because it never really occurred to me that Frogger can move like both up and down. Like, I was always just plowing forward as much as I could, and didn't really connect for me until later that, oh, sometimes your best strategy is to kind of work yourself back down and back up to get to certain points, if you understand what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so I'm definitely way better at Frogger now than I was back in the day. I can get pretty far into the game now. But yeah, it holds up well. It's fun. I also have this like LCD repro. It's like a repro of like the old LCD games you would have gotten in the 80s. It is awful.
What
it port is not fun
do
at
you
all.
Think is on that one? Oh, no, that's not any port. It's just...
No, it's not a port. That is an LCD, like, yeah, handheld game.
Like a Tiger, yeah.
Yeah, like a Tiger game. Yeah, it's bad. Really, really bad. How about you? What did you think?
So, yeah, I love this game. You know, obviously the arcade original version, I think, is the best. The 2600, you know, like you said, is... I mean, it looks pretty awful, but for me, it plays really well, and it's still really fun. You know, it really captures the spirit of the game. I'm trying to think of the other versions I know. There's a really strange Game Gear port.
Okay.
That it's a totally different game, but it's still really cool. I won't go into that. Our listeners should just check that out.
So the last time I played the arcade version of Frogger, this is kind of weird. It was at a resort, I'll call it a resort, in northern Wisconsin. Not the place with the creepy doll room, but the place where you get like a series of cabins around a lake, and the same family has owned it for, you know, 100 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the cabins themselves are, you know, they were built sometime around World War II, maybe earlier. So it's very... very rustic. It's a very nice place, and they have a lakefront bar, like a little, like, you know, I guess lakefront bar is the best description I can have for it. And it's basically for people staying at the resort. There's only like six cabins, so it's not like a huge bar. And you go there, and they have, like, you know, a pool table, but they also have a tabletop Frogger there, mm-hmm, like cocktail table Frogger, which I'd not seen in the 80s even. Mm-hmm. And I talked to the owner of the place, and they're like, oh, yeah, we bought this in, like, 1983 or whatever, and it still works. So, just been in that, you know, little bar forever. And, yeah, it does work. The joysticks clearly have a lot of wear on them, but the screen was fine. And it's a fun experience playing that. You can play that two-player, you know, and the screen, like, flips, mm-hmm, based on who's playing.
Yeah, man, this game, I mean... it's so simple, and just, I think it's a model of good game design, especially in the early 80s, where you see the screen and you immediately know what to do. You know, it really doesn't need any instructions. It's not too frustrating when it gets more difficult. You know, it feels pretty fair. Mm-hmm. Great graphics, great sound. Like I said, you know, I think even the bad ports are pretty good. I have a buddy that has arcade cabinets and in a few, you know, bars and well, arcades. And he said that of all his cabs, Frogger is always like number one moneymaker every week, which really surprised me. Hmm. Well, it surprised me and it didn't surprise me, you know. Like I think Street Fighter or something would be up there, but he said Frogger is like by far number one.
Yeah. Well, it's very accessible, right? Anyone, you know, I think there's just a lot of people who don't like fighting games, you know, so, like, anybody will put a quarter in a Frogger machine. And it's probably a game you don't have at home. You probably don't have an arcade version. Everybody has ports of Street Fighter if you're into video games. And
yeah, yeah.
You have ports of Pac-Man, and you have 15 different devices that you can plug into your TV to play Pac-Man on. But I bet Frogger's not a game you have unless you have a MAME cabinet.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just such a fantastic game for, you know, how simple it is. You know, the level design, it was just great. You know, I really think, I mean, they really knocked it out of the park with this one.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So, what do you think you're going to play for next Game Club?
So, this is not super retro, but the game is over 15 now, and I think that seems old enough. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Katamari Damacy, or for Game Club purposes, it's all the same game. There's, you know, five or six different games called Katamari Damacy. Mm-hmm. any of them are fine. PlayStation 2, PSP, whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that game, I can't believe how old that game is now. I'm kind of moved to play that this week.
It is so good.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm so glad you picked that one. I'm going to go with Road Blasters.
Yeah. That's a solid game, too.
What's it?
Yeah, that's a really solid pick, too.
Oh, yeah. And it's this is not Road Blaster. This is Road Blasters, one word with an S at the end. So we have a link in show notes. You'll probably have to go to archive.org or something to play it.
I think there is a NES port, isn't there?
Oh, I don't know. See, when I picked this, I didn't even know.
Oh, there's a Genesis. I'm thinking of the Genesis. There's a Genesis and Lynx port, and it probably turns out I own the Lynx port. I'll have to check. And there is an NES port. Look at that. I was positive there was a Tengen remake of this for NES. Go with the Genesis one, though, if you don't want to do the arcade version.
Yeah, I'm excited for both these games. Yeah. So if our listeners play any of these games or have different opinions on Star Fox or have any news items or any cool projects you're working on, anything retro, email at retrogameclub.net. That is email at retrogameclub.net. Hit us up on Facebook. That's facebook.retrogameclub.net. Or on Twitter at RGC Podcast, which Zach runs all that stuff for us. So thank you, Zach. Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you.
Some good emails this week.
Yeah, we got a bunch here. Let's see. Majors writes about the Taito arcade closing in Japan. And in related sad news, Namco US Arcade Division is also supposedly closing up shop. There's an article about it that he sends us a link to. It's going to be selling off its locations to three different companies, and the assumption is that Dave and Buster's might be buying some of them.
Makes sense.
All right. Blizzard Rock and Roll Racing, noting that they released it free back in 2014. I remember this. They gave the game away for free, but the music was removed. So there you go. Op Nintendo Video. So he was very happy to hear us talk about Long Island Retro. So he went to the show in 2019, it looks like. I said, one cool thing about this show is that it takes place in an aviation museum. So there'll be a full-size A-10 above you while you're playing a Pac-Man arcade game.
Sweet.
overall, it was all, he says, very well organized, very well displayed. They did have to cancel in 2020, but they are, you know, putting out videos and podcasts and streams. And Twinkle Star Sprites, this is another game that does the, you know, mechanic of dumping on your opponent is Tetris Attack, which I've not played in a very, very long time. And then playing with Power series on Crackle. So he's made it through the first episode so far. Said there's some criticism online that they focus way too much on Nintendo products. So if you're not a Nintendo fanboy, maybe that documentary is not for you.
It's literally a Nintendo documentary. So anyone complaining about it, they're just literally watching the wrong
yes. thing.
I meant to mention that. Yeah, I watched all but the last episode, and it's okay. You know, I think I've gotten to the point where I know most of the stuff. Like, some of the really early stuff with Nintendo, I did not know. But, it's okay. My only criticism is it's the kind of editing where they keep cutting from different interview to different interview, kind of putting the story together that way. And I just kind of want to listen to the person talk. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like the games that made us, or the toys that made us. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's cut that way.
I hate that. Okay. Yeah. That's the problem with that one too. You really want to get into hear someone's story and they cut to something else. So it's all just like 1 second clips of people.
One of my favorite parts though is Tommy, what's the name of the Intellivision owner?
Tommy Tallarico.
Thank you. Yeah. He shows off his Super Nintendo dev kit that he never gave back to Nintendo. I think that's one of my favorite parts.
And then they sued him. All right. next email we got is from Stanley, who writes in about the game.com some more. So you can't believe he's conversing so long about this horrible, horrible handheld. apparently there was a smaller variant called the Game.com Pocket Pro. It had better battery life and only one cartridge slot and a backlit screen. And it came in different colors in the same way that the Game Boy Pocket came in different colors. But Tiger did not improve it that much. They did not have a screen with better refresh rate or, again, actual color or a faster CPU. So it's the same bad system, but now smaller and with fewer features. if you look at their list of canceled games on Wikipedia, it is pretty impressive, though. Sonic 3D Blast, Command & Conquer Red Alert are both games listed as canceled. He has no idea how either of those could possibly work on the game.com.
Yeah.
So, yeah. He says enjoys the podcast and has been helping him stay sane during quarantine, along with the Retro Hour and the 2600 Game by Game podcast. Both podcasts I would highly recommend.
Yeah, great podcasts. And
they just did Mario Brothers on the 2600 Game by Game podcast. And that was a good one. In the Retro Hour, I don't think it's their most recent episode, but they had one of the early developers for Bullfrog on there. And it's a really, really interesting story.
Yeah, I have to catch up on both of those. Now that I don't really have a commute, it's harder for me to listen to all the podcasts I usually do.
Yeah, I would say not commuting has definitely changed how I listen to podcasts. There are some podcasts that I used to listen to fairly often that I almost never listen to now. Mm-hmm. And others that I just have on in the background like all the time. So
yeah.
It's just different pattern, I guess.
We have our first email from Russia, from Vadim B. Thank you so much for writing us. I really like the international emails here, but yeah, he's been listening to us since about 2019, and he discovered us during our LACA episode, and which was a pretty early episode. He's discovered some cool games. He brought in the new year by playing DuckTales Remastered and Super Monkey Ball, with both turned out to be great. And then some duds. Spider-Man on 32X is pretty bad, which, yep. And he really enjoyed Twinkle Star Sprites. He really likes the kind of Japanese cute-em-up style, the Japanese cute style, but he never got into the cute-em-ups and really liked this one. Side Pocket. He thanks us for bringing up this obscure gem. So I guess in mid-2000s rural Russia, Mega Drive knockoffs were still pretty mainstream among kids, and they had like really beat up old carts, which he won't even really call carts. They were pretty much just bare PC boards. And so he traded his buddy. He forgets what game, but he got Side Pocket for it, and he actually really enjoyed it. He said he secretly enjoyed it back then, because you know, he kind of said, told his friend it was probably a lame game, but I'll trade this anyway.
Oh, I was gonna say one thing though. I saw there was an article of maybe we talked about on this show, maybe not. I forget how long ago this was, but there was a really long write-up about the different Mega Drive knockoffs that were available in Russia and in other parts of Eastern Europe. I would really like to get some of those. There were some really crazy looking things.
Yeah. I remember there was an article, I forget if it was Mega Drive, but yeah, I think the one article we did that I remember was in Poland. Yeah.
Just okay.
Wild stuff. It's weird, weird consoles. So Vadim, if you want to send us some images of some weird Mega Drive knockoffs, we'd love to see those. Rob writes in that he grew up playing Frogger, and whenever the music would come on, he doesn't remember if it was 2600 or Coleco, but his dog would start howling. But he says this game has definitely changed over the years, but his daughter won a bunch of tickets at the arcades with the new versions of them.
Oh yeah, some of those crazy. Speaking of going to Orlando, they have a lot of the hotels have these kind of ticket redemption games that are, you know, like some crazy version of Pac-Man or another arcade game, where you win 2,000 tickets, but 2,000 tickets nowadays, I guess, is enough to buy the eraser.
Yeah, yeah. It's like an entire tree worth of tickets. That, yeah.
Yeah. I tell you, when quarantine's over, I gotta make a trip back down to, People's Choice Family Fun Center, which is have I mentioned that place before?
I'm sure you have, but I don't remember it.
The name sounds, like some sort of communist, resort, mm-hmm. People's Choice Family Fun Center. And it's not super close, but they have a giant VHS and retro game store as part of the Family Fun Center.
Oh, wow.
So it's really a place where there's like just a ton of ticket games, so it's for kids. So they have ticket games and prizes. And, you take your kids there to go play a bunch of, like Chuck E. Cheese, but they have way more games than a Chuck E. Cheese. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because food isn't like their mainstay. It's really ticket games. And then, yeah, the weird retro VHS game store. I mean, they had all, I'm telling you, they had like every system, but it was totally disorganized, total hodgepodge of stuff. Like, it's really like a fishing or digging expedition when you go there. I've gotten like some weird like import systems from them that someone must have traded in at some point. So really strange place. I got to go back there once, whenever it's like safe to leave the house again.
Yeah, you'll have to share some pictures from there.
Yeah.
Let's see. Stanley writes in, a month ago, he said he'd send us some photos of his Crazy Kong cocktail cab that he finally got around to cleaning up. So he sent us some photos there. And it still needs some refurbishing, but it's pretty authentic. And he also refurbished a... looks like a Neo Geo MVS four-game cabinet with retrofitted parts and an Atari Millipede cab, which I have one next to me here, too. I love that artwork on that one. But he also repairs 2600s and 7800s for fun, adding composite and stereo and stuff like that. That's pretty cool. I wonder if he does it for other people as well. You may have... You may have some clients from this podcast.
Yeah. I guess on social media, we asked a couple of questions about Mortal Kombat favorites, very generically, and retro video games that could be made into TV game shows, again, based on the Frogger news from last episode. I'm going to kind of lightning round a few of these, if that's all right with you.
Mm-hmm.
Frogger. Let's see, someone writes in that that's their favorite one-handed arcade game, even above Qbert and Pac-Man. And that's an interesting topic. Arcade games that can be played with only one arm.
Yeah, that and is a good topic.
Yeah, not as many as you would think.
Yeah.
Not a big fan of Mortal Kombat, someone says, but they like the theme music. Other people, we got some votes for Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 and Shaolin Monks. So at the peak of being an arcade rat, when MK3 came out, first saw a cabinet and there were 30 people surrounding it, taking turns fighting the winner. There was no game facts, just urban legends at that point. Uh-huh. And it's the kind of thing you will never experience again because, one, there's just not that many arcades. It's just a different, whole different time. And I remember that too. Yeah, new fighting game would come out and there'd be a huge crowd of people around it and everybody trying to figure out the moves and people with the terrible rumors about secret moves they saw that didn't actually exist. Someone else mentions that they met a few of the actors from the first Mortal Kombat and that they're all very, very nice. And I've met most of the actors from the first Mortal Kombat and they all are indeed very nice.
Cool.
But being stunt people, they are all, I don't mean this in a derogatory way, they're all much shorter than you expect. So, like, you see them on the arcade game, and they look like huge, towering people, right? But you forget that, like, most of these people got started as Hollywood stuntmen, and they're all, like, 5'6 to 5'8.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Don't get me wrong, they're all trained martial artists and could completely do, like, I have a big reach advantage over all of them. But I would not last in a fight against any of them. So, video games to TV shows, Pac-Man, of course, chasing people around in a big maze. Someone mentions there was a UK show that used the Total War Rome game in some sort of competition.
Wow.
Interesting. Blizzard Arcade Collection news story. I guess we got a bunch of feedback on the Blizzard Arcade Collection, which I said I thought was the worst idea I'd ever heard of.
Yeah.
Yeah, so someone says thumbs down. He says these games should be 99 cents each.
That's about right. I think that's how I felt too. Yeah.
Yeah, one person says they want Lost Vikings 2, but nothing else. Someone bought it. Someone did buy it recently. The best feature is the Rock and Roll Racing Definitive Edition, because it has a zoom feature. And if you're running it on PC, you can apply CRT effects.
Oh, cool. That is cool.
So that sounds cool. Yeah.
Well, cool. Yeah. Thank you everyone for all those emails and all the social media feedback. It's literally why we do the podcast, even though I butcher most of them.
Yes. So thank you very much.
Keep writing them in. And, those games again for Game Club is Road Blaster and Katamari Damacy.
Yes.
And I think that wraps it up.
Yeah, I think so. So thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you.